Court is ready to hear oral argument in Humana Hospital Corporation Incorporated versus American Medical Systems Incorporated.
May I please report on behalf of the union and the defense argument for the case?
May it please the court, my name is Kathy Sheehan and I'm here on behalf of Humana Hospital Corporation. The appellant in the federal court and in this proceeding and a co-defendant in the trial court. We are here today on a certified question from the Fifth Circuit, that being whether a seller is entitled to indemnification from the manufacturer for attorney's fees incurred in litigation when the manufacturer settles the claim prior to a judicial determination of the party's liability. Now, American appears to assert in their brief that the Fifth Circuit made a mistake in certifying this question and in accepting the certification because of the procedural basis of the case in the trial court. But it is apparent to Humana that we are here on a question of law that must be answered by this court because there is no clear indication in the precedent in this state and in any statute that answers the question. We have an opportunity to give the common law indemnity rule some meaning and some teeth, that we can make manufacturers honor their obligations to indemnify innocent intermediaries and to do a prompt evaluation and settlement of cases before defense costs get out of control.
What obligation? You've never been determined to have any obligation.
Well, it is our position that we did have a determination in the original summary judgment proceeding. It was in that proceeding that we were brought our motion for summary judgment based on common law indemnity and that we fit within the common law indemnity, and the court granted that motion for summary judgment.
But that motion was conditioned on your being found liable to the plaintiff, wasn't it?
It is not our position that it was found. It was conditional. The part of the prayer says that we are seeking indemnity for any payment that we will have to make for damages to the plaintiff, and then goes on to seek attorney's fees as well. And it was not. It is our position that they were not conditioned together.
Could you get attorney's fees if you weren't someone who were subject to being indemnified? How else could you recover an attorney's fees against the co-defendant?
Well, it is our position that we are entitled to indemnification, which is attorney's fees in this type of situation because it is a pure vicarious liability situation. We are not going to have to pay any damages to the plaintiff because it's going to come through the manufacturer so that our defense costs should be paid as part of that indemnification claim through the proof of our summary judgment.
Well, in fact, you've steadfastly denied liability to the plaintiff, haven't you?
Yes, we have.
Contend even as we speak that you have no obligation to the plaintiff.
That's correct, that any obligation would be a pure vicarious liability as a member of the marketing chain, and that is how we were brought into the suit, is as a member of the marketing chain, and so our liability would be of a pure vicarious nature.
But you deny liability vicarious or otherwise. You don't contend that the plaintiff has any claim against you.
That's correct.
So if the plaintiff can't recover against you, how can you recover against another defendant?
Well, the plaintiff wouldn't be able to recover against us even with a finding of liability. Under Duncan, when the suit is based against us because we're a member of the marketing chain, it is vicarious liability, and the issue would be submitted as a defective product. So it would be separate liability against us if we were found liable.
If you were the only solvent. If you're in the chain and you're the only solvent person, you're going to end up with that judgment. And there's still going to be a joint several judgment against you.
And then
found effective, would you have common law indemnity?
If the product was found defective, if the product was found effective and it was submitted at a jury with both defendants, we would still have our right of indemnification against the manufacturer, whether they were solvent or not, we wouldn't really control whether we were entitled.
You can end up drop that. I was just talking about who's going to end up paying. But there's a public policy reason there why one party should go against the other. I mean, if both defendants in this hypothetical were found liable, there's a public policy reason to give the innocent retailer indemnity and perhaps to give attorney's fees in that situation. But But what's the public policy here if you're not ever judged liable? American Medical never brought suit against you. I mean, it was the plaintiff's choice to sue Humana, not American Medical. And the plaintiff never got a judgment against Humana, or there never was a judicial determination of liability. What is the public policy reason for forcing American Medical to pay your attorney's fee?
Well, the public policy, the main public policy reason under that situation is that the manufacturer should carry the risk and the burden in this situation. We are a mere conduit of their product. They have the most control over the condition of the product that they put into the stream of commerce. And because this suit is not brought against us, because if we were entitled to the indemnity, it would be because we had no independent culpability.
What if the plaintiff sued 400, should every member of this court, just as individuals? Should American Medical have to pay our attorney's fees for our trouble in going down there and getting out of that lawsuit because we weren't involved in this transaction? Because under your theory they had medical was at fault?
Well, if I'm understanding your situation, what we are saying is that the only reason we are entitled to the indemnification because we are in the marketing chain. And if all of you were in the marketing chain and you passed it along from individual to individual, that it would still be the same premise of common law indemnity, that your liability is purely vicarious, and you have to establish that your liability is purely vicarious, and that's why they owe you an indemnity. Excuse me?
You didn't establish any liability.
Well, it is our position that in our motion for summary judgment, we did establish that we filed a cross-claim for indemnity claiming that we were entitled to common law indemnity because we had no independent culpability and that we were an innocent member of the marketing chain. And we think that that is all that's necessary to establish our right to attorney's fees, because the manufacturer is in a position to accept a tender of defense and lessen the cost. They can evaluate their cases and their claims. This will promote prompt settlement of meritorious claims. And the retailers are generally, all across the board of all different types of retailers, are not in a position to bargain with every manufacturer to get a contract to ensure that they will seek indemnity. That is the reason, it is my understanding, the reason that common law indemnity has been preserved, that Duncan preserve the common law indemnity in order to protect the vicariously liable party, a party that has no independent culpability but is simply brought into the case because of the chain of distribution.
But I thought I read your brief to argue that you're not even in the chain of distribution.
Well, our position...
good was linked to services and you're not even in the chain.
No, it is our position that we are in the chain. We are not contending to be a retailer or a seller. The hospital is not in the business of selling goods. But it is our understanding from the reading of Duncan that you do not have to be a retailer or seller specifically, but you have to be an innocent member in the marketing chain, and that is the reason we were brought into the case. And the summary judgment evidence presented, there was no claim made by anyone that we had independent culpability. We were there because we were a member of the marketing chain, and that is the reason we believe the same principles that apply to a retailer or a seller have to apply to anyone in the marketing chain that is merely in it because they passed the product along. There was no evidence that we knew of any known defect in the product or that we made any alterations of the product. We were merely brought into the case because we were in the chain of distribution. The trial court and the appellee contend that the case of Austin Road Company v. Pope and a court of appeals case of Ling v. Ladd controls this issue, and it is our contention that that is not applicable to the fact situations, because in that case they were dealing with two guilty or two culpable tortfeasors, and they were trying to determine if one of the culpable or guilty tortfeasors owed indemnity to another tortfeasor. And that's why that case does not apply, that ours was brought under Duncan and the common law indemnity, and the principles set out that if you are an innocent member in the chain of distribution and you have no independent culpability, which we believe we established in the summary judgment, that we are entitled to indemnification of our attorney's fees.
Did you insist in the trial court on a judicial determination that you were liable to the plaintiff?
Did you ever move for summary judgment or ask for trial to determine that, in fact, you were liable for the plaintiff?
No, we didn't.
You're contending you're not going to be bound by that settlement, though.
Bound by the settlement in the sense that, we are, liable to the, plaintiff? No. The settlement was, made with American. American settled the case prior, after the, summary judgment determination and prior to a judicial determination.
At what point did you tender your defense to American, and how did, what were the facts surrounding that action?
I don't have that knowledge. I will have to...
Is that in the proof? In the record? In this
no, case? I don't believe that the offer of tender defense is in the record.
So, I mean, you mentioned that at, some limiting factor, but it's not really in the record for us.
No, no, it's not. It is Humana's, also Humana's contention that the Plastex case versus U.S. Steel of this court in April of 1989 is not controlling because in that case the defendant was exonerated of all liability. We are here, trying to determine of what's going to happen when there's a settlement. And also in that case there was a finding, originally there was an award of attorney's fees to the party seeking indemnity when there was no finding of liability against them, but when the, court determined that there was no finding of liability, they were completely exonerated, the manufacturer was exonerated, then they did not owe attorney's fees. If we do not put some meaning behind the common law rule, the manufacturers will never have a need to ever accept a tender of a defense, even a case that is clearly vicarious liability on the intermediary, because they know that they will never have to pay defense costs if they settle the case on the steps of the trial court. The manufacturers will be able to string along intermediaries in this manner. This, by finding that we are entitled to our attorney's fees, even in light of a settlement, will promote early settlement because the manufacturers will have to evaluate their cases and they will want to find out early if this is a meritorious claim to lower their defense costs, not only their defense costs, but the defense costs of the innocent intermediary. The manufacturer is going to contend that, this is the cost of doing business, but it is our position that that is the cost of doing business that must fall on the manufacturer and not on the innocent intermediary, because they are the innocent party and the manufacturer has the control over their product and they are the party that should carry this burden. The retailers are not in the position to force the manufacturers to enter into contractual indemnity agreements.
I assume it follows that if there had been a trial in this case, and if Humana had been determined not to be liable to the plaintiff, and neither was American Medical Systems, the defendants were exonerated of liability in this case, you would still claim indemnity for attorney's fees against American Medical.
I believe that in light of the Plastex case, I can't actually make that contention. I believe that under policy it should be that way, but this court has ruled in the Plastex case that the finding of no liability makes the manufacturer.
What's the difference between a finding of no liability and no finding of liability?
Because it gives the opportunity of the manufacturer to refuse a tender of defense when they know that this is a case of, that the intermediary is entitled to indemnity. I can't.
How do we know that they know that?
Because
you've never admitted it. In fact, you steadfastly deny liability to the plaintiff. You even argue you might not be in the chain of distribution and may not have any liability at all. How do we know that they know that you actually are deserving of indemnity?
Well, we are not saying that we are deserving of indemnity only if we are liable to the plaintiff, because we are not liable because of any acts of our own is the reason that we are entitled to indemnity, and that a finding of no liability against the innocent intermediary is not controlling. It is the relationship between the party seeking indemnity and the manufacturer, and whether the that innocent intermediary is basically innocent, that they are have no independent culpability and that they merely pass the product along. And that is what entitles them to attorney's fees. And, it is policy reasons that we feel that those attorney's fees must be awarded even in light of a settlement. That it will make the manufacturers responsible for their product.
What if the manufacturer pays $500 just because it's cheaper to do that than to go to trial? Then, as a policy reason, they've got to assume the defense costs for anybody else that's in the chain. I mean, this can retard settlement, can it not? As can all attorney's fees shifting mechanisms many times force people to go to trial because of that added consideration, rather than their stated purpose of encouraging people to settle early.
Well, I don't think the potential that the potential of liability in a trial court and the award of damages of a jury is something that a manufacturer weighs as more beneficial than paying the attorney's fees. I think that this would make them evaluate their cases more diligently early, so that because they know that they are going to owe attorney's fees to the party, the innocent intermediary, and I think it will promote judicial economy of getting the cases settled in a more timely fashion than at a later time.
If we were to accept your argument, what kind of standards do we need to write into this case to make sure that you are in the chain? I mean, what kind of proof should you have to offer to establish that you are one that is entitled to attorney's fees, as opposed to any one of the nine of us who is clearly not in the chain?
Well, I believe it would be the same as under any summary judgment, that you have to conclusively establish that you are the innocent intermediary, that you pass it along to the chain of commerce, to the marketing chain, and that you have no independent culpability. The manufacturer then would be able to assert summary judgment proof that you have independent culpability and you're not entitled to indemnity from them.
But to establish it, don't you have to go one step further and prove that the manufacturer does have liability, which you're unwilling to do?
I do not think that is necessary, that we have to prove that they have liability. They have to prove that we do not have any independent culpability, and that we are placed in this position because of the manufacturer's product. And that is the reason that we feel we are entitled to attorney's fees.
But you acknowledge if there's nothing wrong with the manufacturer's product, then you can't get indemnity. If a jury comes back and says there's nothing wrong with this product, you can't get your attorney's fees from the manufacturer.
I admit that in light of the Plastex case, I don't believe I can make that argument for this court, but I do believe that the policy reasons that support that we get it in light of settlement would also get it otherwise as well.
That was Humana self-insured?
Excuse me?
Humana self-insured.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that.
Well, you present your... I'm saying, are we dealing here with two carriers? What carriers are going to pay the insurance?
No, we're not.
Your carrier?
No, we're not dealing with that. We're not dealing with that. Not that I'm aware of.
Are you with an insurance company or Humana?
I represent Humana.
And they have no insurance company?
I came into this at the appellate level, and I really am not aware of that fact. I'll find out and file something for you.
It's not necessary. I'm just curious whether or not one insurance carrier is trying to shift.
I'm sure it is an insurance carrier. Thank
you. Her client is going to be humanity. Keep it writing. Any other questions?
In a complex products liability case where the only responsibility of the non-manufacturer defendants is that they were in the chain of commerce that got the product to the claimant. If you don't have a rule like that that you're advocating, does it encourage the manufacturer to keep the intermediaries in the case through extensive discovery just in order to get some money from them?
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree that it would.
Well, now, wait a minute. If the manufacturer ever sued the intermediary, did American Medical ever file any cross claim against Humana?
No.
Yeah, I mean, once they do, then there's a different rule.
I'm not talking about cross action. I'm just talking about getting contribution from them because they are exposed to such extensive defense costs in the case.
That's correct. If Humana was not certain that they were going to get their defense costs, they would want to settle this case earlier, and it would serve the manufacturer's purpose to keep us in separately so that that we would help in taking care of the settlement, and there would be no need for them to accept a tender defense on our part. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ken. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Don Milano will give an argument for the respondent.
Good morning. Judge Doggett, I think Humana's argument, to an extent, is going to assume some kind of evil intent on the part of American Medical Systems to string them along in a case. And I don't think that that's a proper presumption. I don't know if I can ask this court to take judicial notice of what happens in the Western District of Texas. But you can file a motion for summary judgment on answer day, and it won't be determined until a month before the case goes to trial, pre-trial conference.
Is that according to some local rule?
Well, I don't know.
Or just practice?
That's just their practice. And you can, I filed motions there before, and you can wait a year to get it heard. And all the time discovery is going on. There was no conclusive proof in this case that Humana was an innocent retailer. We interpreted their motion for summary judgment, and I think it's clear from the motion itself and the memorandum in support that it was conditional on a finding of liability.
Was there any pleading of any independent grounds of liability by the plaintiff?
I don't recall, Judge Doggett. I really don't remember if there was. You know, there's always the potential, and I guess that's one of the other problems. What if, assuming Humana is correct and we should have accepted their tender defense, discovery goes on and discovery establishes that there is an independent claim, then do I withdraw and give it back to them? Are they going to be forced to segregate their fees in a case where there is independent liability and prove the attorney's fees incurred in defending the independent claims versus the attorney's fees incurred in proving that they're immune from any liability? The purpose of indemnity, the way American understands it in Bonneville anyway, was to prevent unjust enrichment. There hadn't been any here. American Medical Systems was not unjustly enriched by refusing Humana's tender defense. And Humana's correct, we do think that's a cost of doing business. We have no control over who's made a defendant. And I agree that had we made a claim against Humana or brought them in as a third party, I think that'd be a different question. But I don't have any control over who's made a defendant in the lawsuit. And for that reason, I think in the absence of a finding of liability, it's inequitable to force Americans to pay their Humana's attorney's fees.
Well, what was accomplished by the partial summary judgment?
My understanding of the partial summary judgment, the effect of the court's order was that in the event Humana was found liable to Andrew Smith, Humana would be entitled to indemnity. Now, the order entered by the court, a later order entered, the pretrial order says that the motion for summary judgment was granted without more. The case was settled, a judgment was entered, and Humana opposed to the form of the judgment because he didn't dispose of their attorney's fees claim. And Judge Prado entered an order thereafter that said, I didn't rule on the attorney's fees, and now I want briefs on it. And tell me why you think you're entitled to them or why they're not entitled to them. So, you know, in that procedural context, I'd say that the effect of the judgment, the summary judgment, is that they would be entitled to indemnity in the event they were found liable to the plaintiff. And
there are really two elements to their indemnity claim, that both defendants are liable to the plaintiff and that vis-a-vis you, they're innocent.
That's correct.
And the summary judgment established that second element.
Well, I don't know that I concede that necessarily. I think that in the summary judgment established that in the event they were innocent, that they'd be entitled to indemnity.
Well, it didn't establish much, but that's all it established.
That's our position. counsel came up here and said first Humana was a seller, and then an innocent intermediary, and then a member of the marketing chain, and then decided that she wasn't any of those. That's the problem. I think the Easterly opinion is real clear on that, and although it dealt with the UCC question, if the device is incident to the provision of service, then they're not a seller. They're not a retailer. And our position would be that they wouldn't be entitled to indemnity for that reason also. If you meant it too, I think...
Did you deny liability to the plaintiff in the settlement agreement?
Yes, sir. There was no admission of liability. I think that was the next point I was getting to. Humana's really asking this court to go behind the settlement agreement and say, well, because you settled, you must have been liable. You must have been admitting liability. And that's clearly not the case. And I think it would have, if Humana's argument is accepted, it's going to have a chilling effect on settlements. I don't think it's going to promote settlements at all. I think it may force manufacturers to go litigate a case to prove a questionable case of liability. They're going to go ahead and litigate. If they win it, then if Humana's correct, even if they win it, we'd have to pay their attorney's fee. And that certainly is inequitable. I think...
Wait a minute. Humana disclaimed that under our class decision.
Okay.
Why shouldn't that be the rule?
What is the rule, Your
Honor? If the manufacturer finds there's no basis for a cross action against one of the intermediaries, and the only claim of the plaintiff is one of vicarious liability, why shouldn't the manufacturer be responsible for the innocent retailers, supplier, wholesalers, attorney's fees, irregardless of the outcome?
Because I didn't bring them into the lawsuit. I have no control over who sued. Anybody can be a defendant. And it doesn't seem to me that, if a plaintiff goes out and sues the manufacturer and every member of the conduit all the way down the line, that I should have to pay for all those attorney's fees. That doesn't make sense. I don't think that would help a manufacturer evaluate a claim any faster. I mean, they have to evaluate the claim. The product is either defective or it's not. And not with this kind of hammer over their head of, well, don't forget, too, that there's 10 other defendants out there in there.
Does it make any difference if they tender their defense fee so that you're really not incurring attorney's fees but for one firm?
Potentially, but then the problem then becomes, fine, they may tender the defense on day one, but I might not get a ruling. They may not get a ruling on their summary judgment for a year on indemnity, which is what happened in this case. Making that assumption.
Is it in the record Humana's tender of defense fees?
No, sir. I don't believe it is. As a matter of fact, the attorney's fees were never proved. There was never any evidence submitted by Humana. My understanding would be if this court answers the question in Humana's favor and it goes back to the Fifth Circuit and they agree with or they decide the case on the basis of this court's interpretation, it's going to have to be remanded to the district court for a determination of fees. So still haven't been approved. In none of the cases relied upon by Humana, and this was recognized by the district court, none of the cases that they cite were attorney's fees alone awarded. And I guess one of the uncertainties I have in my own mind is exactly what this court is being called upon to do in this case. There was a portion of Humana's prayer was asking that this court enter a judgment for fees. And that wasn't my understanding of the proceeding before this court. And I don't know if I should address the merits of their claim or not. I prefer, and my understanding is that this court's being asked just to answer the question of, in the absence of liability, are they entitled to their attorney's fees?
How do you view a certified question procedure? Should we just answer the question, or should we go into the facts of this case? and decide what we would do in this case if it were before us?
I think...
Or just the isolated academic answer to the question itself?
I think the isolated academic answer to the question itself, Judge.
A lot has been said by both counsel about the facts of the case, and I'm just wondering
whether
or not we should be deciding this case or just deciding the law question.
I think it's just a law question, and I tried to couch my factual arguments in almost a conditional portion of my brief, if you will, if we got past that issue. I think that there isn't, the certified question from the federal courts is so new, I wasn't able to find any authority on it. But from the intermediate courts of appeals, the law is very clear that you're limited to, or this court is limited to, the certified question and whatever facts are before it. But I think, you know, it's still a question of just answering that limited issue. Under Texas law, is assuming that they're an innocent retailer, are they entitled to indemnity for attorney's fees in the absence of a finding of liability?
You're relying primarily on Bonnewell against Beach.
For the most part, Benton and Duncan. And the Court of Appeals cases, it was Ringer Lawyers Title and can't remember the name of the other one, it escapes me. But they all, Pate versus Tellison, those are Court of Appeals cases, but they all required a finding of liability, and I think really that's the only way it can work. Because otherwise, they're asking, you know, if they litigate an indemnified claim, it's one thing, but just because they made a party to a lawsuit and I don't have any control over it, I don't think that's proper for us to have to.
If they're confident enough in your sovereignty that they go to the best judgment, in a legitimate settlement with the plaintiff, then you don't have this argument, do you? Of course, they then still have to establish your probable liability.
Right.
I mean, that Southern Pacific Transportation Company versus Missouri Kansas Pacific.
MKT. Yes, sir. I think they would. And I don't see where that would ever really occur, that Humana would go confess judgment.
We've got large enough fees and small enough damages.
Possible. If there aren't any further questions, I'll give my time back to the court.
Are there any questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
I only have a couple of comments. One is that we, as opposed to what Appley is saying, we were not contending that we were none of the above. We are contending that we fit within the same rule that should be applied to a retailer because we are a member of the marketing chain, whether we are a retailer or seller. And I think we can come up with any number of situations that this could be complicated, but I think we have to look at the general overall situations that do arise, and that is one similar to that's before this court today, that there are innocent intermediaries that are incurring costs. And I, in response to your last question to Appalia, I can see that there would be a time that they would the intermediary would want to pursue the case because the only damage they do have is their attorney's fees, and at this point they may know enough about the case to know that the manufacturer is liable to the plaintiff and the merits of the case, and then it would cause further litigation just for the reward of their attorney's fees.
What about the respondent's point that until you do the discovery, it may not be clear whether or not the intermediary has some separate liability? Maybe the product was altered, maybe it was mishandled, maybe it was misgiven in the case. But that's not immediately clear.
And
in fact, and if we have a tender rule that the manufacturer might have to tender it back, or he might be in a position to, since he's representing you,
I don't think that would cause
mess up the discovery and then tender it back.
Well, I think that there are situations now, even under contractual indemnity, where a tender of defense is made and accepted, and then it becomes apparent that that the evidence is showing that there is a conflict, then there is a return of the defense, and then the only logical conclusion would be a segregation of the fees at that point. It's our position
that we wouldn't have to require an irrevocable tender.
I wouldn't think so, Your Honor. It's our position that the answer to the certified question should be yes, that they do owe indemnification to the seller, even in light of the settlement.
Any other questions? Thank you, Your
Honor.
That concludes the argument of the second clause. The court will take another brief recess.
Your Honor, please rise.